What is school really about? It's about making you line up. That's basically what it's about. It's about making children line up, be orderly. John Dewey, right, the father of democratic education, he was all about that. He loved that. That's why he loved war, by the way. John Dewey welcomed World War I because he said it would bring social order to the country, because the military is the most orderly institution in society. He was right. So making children line up, be obedient, sit in their chairs, raise their hands, only talk when they're supposed to, on and on and on and on. It's like breaking a horse. That's what they do.
Hey everybody, this is Brett. Welcome back to the podcast and the conclusion to our 2013 Liberty Forum series. Actually, what you've been hearing so far in this show is a little clip of a video that I made from my conversation with Thaddeus Russell. That is the podcast you are actually about to hear. So I encourage you to go to YouTube. Our username is School Sucks Podcast. Check out this video. Check out the ones that I made from the Jeffrey Tucker interview as well. I think they're fantastic and frankly underviewed. I'm real into making videos lately, and I'm going to be doing a lot more of that. And these are videos similar to like The American Way, not my silly little face behind a microphone. I know that's been a lot of what has shown up on our YouTube channel lately, but this is different, and I encourage you to check it out. So anyway, here's Thaddeus. Really enjoyed this conversation, learned a lot, really like this guy. I think we're going to be pals. I think you're going to hear him again on the show in the future. All right, take care.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to School Sucks Podcast. We are still live at Liberty Forum, even though you will hear us later. But we are live for a small group of folks outside who are listening. Our guest, Thaddeus Russell, the author of The Renegade History of the United States. We do want to talk about that book. I'm curious, is it getting picked up by some textbook adoption companies in the various states? If not, why not?
You're funny guys. I like you already. Your sense of humor is fabulous. No, not yet. I hope so. A few college professors have adopted it.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh. Yes. Do you mind saying where?
Where they smoke a lot of weed. So Humboldt State.
Yeah.
I'm not kidding. Long Beach State. I think there's a school in Colorado and University of Alabama, only because David Beto teaches there. He's a libertarian.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was trying to give somebody a synopsis of the book. I was like, you know how the mainstream history is more, first of all, there's not a lot of truth, or there's like, you know, little pieces of truth in the mainstream history that we get in public school. But it's like the story of the Luke Skywalker kind of thing. And this is more about the Jabba the Hutts and why they're valuable. I don't know if that's fair. I like to try and use Star Wars.
I know Luke Skywalker. I'm trying to remember Jabba the Hutt's class position in the society.
Jabba the Hutt was... Go ahead. Do you want to do it?
He's like a mafia godfather.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Yes, my book is all about Jabba the Hutt and his underlings. The mafia godfathers in the book are actually sort of the highest order of people I write about. It's mostly about the scum of the earth. It's the prostitutes, street criminals, slaves, drunks, drug addicts, pornographers, people like that.
Like people who come to the Liberty Forum.
Yeah, exactly. I feel very at home.
So it goes beyond like Zinn, who you may or may not be a fan of.
It doesn't go beyond Zinn, it goes below Zinn. So, his brand of history, which I very much admire, and I couldn't have written my book without the work of him and other people like him. They did history called what they called history from the bottom up.
Yeah.
Right. So they replaced the old school history of generals and presidents and inventors. They replaced that with civil rights activists and feminists and labor leaders. And it was a wonderful corrective to the old conservative history. But, you know, that's the historiography I sort of adopted when I went to graduate school in the early 90s. And I was very much into that. I thought that was they had reached the bottom of society by going there. And then it started to occur to me that, you know, as just walking the streets in New York City where I was, or, you know, I realized that America is a lot more than that. You know, there are people who are simply bad. In other words, there are people who break social norms and by doing so expand freedom for all of us. And those are not civil rights activists or feminists or labor leaders. Those are people like prostitutes and criminals and women we call sluts. Those are people who drink too much. Those are people who are slackers, who don't think work in itself is a good thing. And so I started to look for those people in history, and they were largely ignored by history books, and found that, as a matter of fact, many of the freedoms that Americans now take for granted were pioneered by people just like that. People just like that.
So what's the research project for a book like this like? Like, where would you even find this information?
I go to a lot of porn shops and drink a lot and commit crime. No. I was able to use, for the most part, I was able to use the work of other historians. The funny thing is, they, you know, these people, the lowlife, would be mentioned, are mentioned in many books, but there's not an argument constructed around them in those books. So they're sort of mentioned and then tossed off. And so I would find evidence in books that supported my argument about the fact that they created freedom simply by violating social norms in books that did not make that argument. So historians have not been totally ignorant about these people, although largely ignorant. Sure. And when they do deal with them, they usually dismiss them as inconsequential because they're not doing real politics. See, they're not, you know, they're not organizing labor unions. They're not running for Congress. They're not marching in the streets. That's what's considered to be real consequential politics by people in my profession. But cultural politics, I believe, is far more important, and that's what I write about.
So let's just do one example, if you don't mind, of one of these groups expanding freedom for all of us.
Sure.
Who do you want to do, Osborne? You want to do hookers?
I like hookers.
Yeah, let's do hookers.
Hookers are always fun.
Sure.
Not always. I've got stories.
I don't. I mean, that's fine, but actually, I gave a talk in Portland, and I gave a big talk about prostitutes and about all the freedoms they created for women. And this woman was sitting there looking at me with a scowl on her face the entire time. And then during the Q&A, she raised her hand and said, "You know what? I think you're saying all of this just because you want cheaper hookers." And I said, "Yeah, those flights to Thailand are really getting expensive." That's why I wrote the book. Through the 19th century, women were not allowed to walk in public without a male chaperone and be considered respectable. Mm. Women were not allowed to wear bright colors. Women were not allowed to wear makeup. Women were not allowed to dance in public, to drink in public. Women were not allowed to earn wages comparable to men. They weren't allowed to own property and be respectable. The first women to do all of those things, these, of course, are all freedoms that we now take for granted for women. The first women to do those things were prostitutes in the 19th century in the United States, especially in the Western United States, but across the country. So that all those styles, all those freedoms, all those new ways of doing things, all those violating and opening of norms, were taken up by respectable women. So by the early 20th century, you see lots of complaints if you look in the newspapers and in the women's magazines and even in congressional hearings in the early 20th and mid 20th century, you see complaints about women dressing like whores. And that meant simply wearing things like red, the color red, or it meant going to Coney Island with your friends. That was something that only whores did. Going to the movies, terrible thing. Until the whore started doing it. Dancing in public, drinking in public, wearing makeup. Makeup was absolutely the badge of prostitutes until the 20th century. No respectable woman wore makeup. And of course, now it's standard. The red dress was called the scarlet shame of the streetwalker. It was the symbol of prostitution. Well, guess who wears the red dress now? The first lady. Right? So that's how far we've come. So when Michelle Obama and Nancy Reagan and Laura Bush all wear the red dress, they have prostitutes to thank for that. So that's one example of the way in which people who live for their pleasure only and their freedom only, and here's the important thing, without shame, expand freedom for all of us.
What about smoking?
Smoking.
Yeah.
It's bad for you.
I agree. Because this was a real taboo, like, sure, into the 20th century for women.
Yes.
To smoke.
Yes. Yeah. So smoking. Yes, that's another one. You're right. I didn't mention that. So smoking was also not something that respectable women did in the 20th century. Of course, in the 1920s, it became very, very fashionable, right, with the flappers, et cetera.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was another pioneering act by the whores. Right. So yeah, anything. So the general rule for women, and it still applies, but it was very much a lockdown until the 20th century. The general rule was anything you did for your own individual pleasure was bad, because a woman, of course, was supposed to be what? A wife and a mother, and that's it.
Yeah.
She was supposed to be completely selfless, self-sacrificing for the family.
Yeah.
And by extension, the nation, right? Because the family is the building block of the nation and the nation state. So the state is actually very much implicit in all of this.
Sure. Yeah.
So, you know, and that's still, I mean, that's still... Of course, we've broken or widened many of those restrictions, but it's still very much the case where women who live for their own pleasure are castigated. So you can think about some, you can think about many examples in popular culture, right? So Paris Hilton is a good one, right? She seems to be, at least apparently, right, a person who lives only for her own pleasure. She likes to have sex. She likes to do drugs. She gets drunk. She goes to parties. She doesn't work. She enjoys life. That's the worst thing you can do, right? That's why Paris Hilton is pariah number one. Now, half the public loves her and half the public hates her. Half the public who is the public, the people, the popular culture, they love her. Formal culture hates her. And mm-hmm. that's always been the case. So that's what I call formal culture. The politicians, the business leaders, the media, teachers in schools, they are the remnants of Puritanism.
Yeah.
They are the ones who have carried Puritanism through. And so there's this civil war going on in American culture. There always has been. It still continues between individualism and Puritanism.
You're so right. It has survived some of the strangest laws. I mean, I actually lived in Salem, Massachusetts for a long time. And there, you know, they kind of made a whole tourist attraction out of the worst thing that ever happened there.
Right.
That's kind of what they're known for. But the reason why I asked about smoking, one of the things that we focus on our show, and it's an interesting counter to your book, is the generally shitty people who worked throughout the last couple centuries to take freedom away from people. People like Edward Bernays. You know, who I'm sure you're familiar with as the father of public relations, who, you know, pushed a lot of these women out there as props to say, yeah, let's make smoking acceptable to help the cigarette companies.
Mm-hmm.
So,
Wait. Sure. Why is that bad?
I will stand by my characterization of him as generally shitty.
Okay.
Because his task was to basically push this idea and have different presidential administrations and corporations accept the idea that people are basically stupid and emotional and can't reason, and these are all this is just a plethora of strategies that we have to trick them, and was used mostly by government.
Okay.
And mostly for U.S. foreign policy.
Right. Okay. So I mean, when the state is using public relations and advertising, of course, yeah. I'm opposed to it because it's a monopoly, right? We have no choice over what is being pushed in our face.
Sure.
Advertising and public relations gets a very bad rap, usually by the left. I think advertisers, this is maybe a digression, but advertisers generally are beholden to us, to consumers. And if you doubt that, ask an advertiser. I mean, they spend all their time trying to figure out what we want and how to give it to us. So Bernays, I mean, to the extent that he was a corporatist, right, receiving money from the state to do the state's work, I agree with you.
Yeah.
To the extent that he was working in a market system, or when he was working in a market system, a truly market system, then I think he was actually serving a public use. People smoke cigarettes because they want to smoke cigarettes, not because they were told to.
Okay, so this actually yes. kind of leads into my next question. Okay. Is there good in somebody like that, who I would just usually put as a pretty despicable person because mm-hmm. of the absence of principle? Like, yeah, okay, I can certainly understand that public relations and marketing and advertising has a legitimate function, and there's nothing evil about that, of course. But when you have somebody who just has no principle, and if you ever heard him talk about it, he's like, yeah, they said make up a slogan like, we're making the world safe for democracy. And that's what we did, and that's how we sold World War I to people. And it's just like, it doesn't matter. Like, oh, yeah, hundreds of thousands of people died, millions of people died. It was a slogan. So his absence of principle was just alarming to me when he talked about these things. And, yeah, sure, corporations would want him, but the government, too.
Well, a market system is, by definition, unprincipled, right? That's what's good about it.
Why? Why do you say that?
Isn't this like libertarianism 101? That it is based solely on profit motive, which is actually a good thing. I thought that was the argument, self-interest and profit motive, and that's what's good about it, rather than a moral, quote-unquote, economy, right? like socialism.
Well, let's not let the liberals steal the word moral. Okay? Well,
no, I know, but that's what it's been called for centuries. A moral, okay, it's still that phrase is still used. I mean, it goes back to like the 18th century.
Sure,
a moral economy, right? An economy structured around, organized around a set of morals,
right?
Economic decisions based on morality rather than an individual self-interest.
Well, I mean, I would think, too, that it's individual self-interest is...
So I like unprincipled people. And in fact, my people, my heroes, are very much unprincipled. They're very much selfish. They're very much violating norms for their own individual pleasure and freedom. And that's what creates freedom, not morality.
Who do you... If you give us a list of your heroes.
My heroes?
Who's on that list?
Number one, Richard Pryor.
No problem there.
Okay. I love Emma Goldman. I love mostly my heroes. My greatest heroes are the unnamed, anonymous people. You know, like the hookers of the 19th century, like the criminals who sold booze when it was illegal. Right? Those are heroes to me. They weren't all great guys. I wouldn't want to hang out with them.
Sure.
But that's a heroic act. That is very much a heroic act, in my view. Mm-hmm. People who now smoke weed in public with no shame. That's a heroic act, in my view. I don't know the names of most of them, but every single person who does that, every woman who is promiscuous and it's not ashamed of it is a hero in my view.
Mm. Yeah. And I want to be careful too, to not equate selfishness with immorality. I think what the real immorality, I mean, if you look at the 20th century told the story all too well, was self-sacrifice.
Exactly.
That allowed the worst people in the world to do whatever they want.
Precisely.
If they were sacrificing for some greater collective, that was Europe for 100 years.
That was Bernays' message. That's always the state's message, right?
Yeah, yeah.
When he was working for the state. Yeah, of course. That is always the state's message because it must be. It requires that of us, right? So the state became God. You know, in the New Testament, it says, you know, you must sacrifice your body, your pleasure, your freedom for God. Right?
Yeah.
Live an ascetic life, right? Kill your body and its desires for God. The state replaced God, of course, and said, kill your desires, kill your freedom for us, the new God.
Yeah. What was there? It seems like...
That's what Nietzsche said.
Whenever there's a sacrifice, right, there's a payoff later. What was it? What do you think the state attached to that? Because, I mean, religion, that's an easy one.
Well, the same thing. So the same thing. You die in a war, mm-hmm. you get a really great state burial, and you're a hero forever. Unfortunately, you don't know it because you're dead.
Yeah.
So it's not much different than heaven, in my view.
Sure. Right. It's one of the things we talk about a lot with school, is that the gratification, self-satisfaction, the enjoyment of life is always something that's being deferred.
Yeah.
Right? So most you have a bunch of people, millions of people droning their way through life,
exactly.
And the only thing that they are looking forward to is retirement. The last chance to defer happiness. To like, this is when I'll really be happy.
But
that's a habit that starts forming when we're six.
Amen.
Like, do what I say now, you'll thank me later.
That's right. So that idea that instant gratification is bad,
yeah,
and deferred gratification is good, that is a bourgeois concept.
Yeah,
that was invented, again, in the 19th century by what Marxists call the bourgeois class. That's a bourgeois idea. It's a fundamentally conservative idea. What's interesting to me and what's enraging to me and what I spend a lot of my time on is pointing out that the left has fully adopted that. So they're the ones actually who are the greatest critics of instant gratification, who criticizes pop culture and sex on TV and violence in video games, and people, quote unquote, wasting their time watching football on TV.
Spending their own money.
Spending money on useless, quote unquote, things, right? Who are the leading critics of that? That's the left, right?
Yeah,
That's the left. Rick Santorum is the only conservative I know of who gets that. He understands that it's a conservative cause, and he's actually joined with the left. He actually uses left-wing language about this. This is instant gratification. This is a terrible thing. This is what our founding fathers were opposed to, and he was right. It's a conservative cause, just like gay marriage, by the way. And the left is completely unaware of that. They are speaking the way that Victorian schoolmarms spoke in the 19th century.
Listen, because we're pressed for time, I do want to transition to a different subject.
Sure.
Because the first time...
Can we talk about schools more? I love that.
Yeah. Well, that was...
I am the father of a sixth grader in public school in Santa Monica, California, and I fucking hate it every day.
Yeah, we do. Well, we did say in our preliminary discussion, we have to save time to talk about why school sucks.
Good.
So go.
Oh. Well, here's a good one. This is not so much. Well, yeah, sure. It's like kind of everything encapsulated. Say, you know, Santa Monica, very liberal, right?
Sure.
Wealthy, general, you know, highly educated population, mostly white. You know, these are the smart people. These are the people who really, and you know, they're the ones who are interested in, you know, good education for our children and teaching them to be individual thinkers and creative thinkers, right?
Right.
So Obama gave a fundraising talk during the campaign, last campaign, in Santa Monica. So he had to so Marine One had to fly over Santa Monica to where he was giving the talk, and it flew right over my son's school. And his teacher, I think it was in fifth grade at the time, his teacher sent out an email saying how proud she was that all of her class stopped and looked up at the sky at Marine One as it flew over. So, you know, my first response was, well, what if it had been Bush? You know, would you have said the same thing? Of course not, right? Because he was the bad guy. So there's no sense of authority as such being the problem, mm-hmm. especially state authority, especially flying in a military vehicle over a school and having the children salute a killing machine. It's, you know, of course they have no sense of that. There's no critique of that going on in the school. It's whoever, you know, the good guy in office is, if there's a good guy in office, then it's fine. Then we can kill whoever we want. And deference to authority is a wonderful thing.
Yeah.
So that's been the number one thing that's chafed at me daily. the other thing is, I mean, this is, of course, from day one of schooling, and this goes even back to preschool, but especially in kindergarten, the first minute he stepped into school, what do they do to you? And what is school really about? It's about making you line up.
Sure.
That's basically what it's about. It's about making children line up. Be orderly. John Dewey, right? The father of democratic education. He was all about that. He loved that. That's why he loved war, by the way. John Dewey welcomed World War I because he said it would bring social order to the country, right? Because the military is the most orderly institution in the society. He was right. So making children line up, be obedient, sit in their chairs, raise their hands, only talk when they're supposed to, on and on and on and on. It's like breaking a horse. That's what they do. That's primarily the mission, the function of public schools is to break children.
Yeah. And those are the people that we spend a lot of time talking about, Dewey. I mean, well, phase one, Horace Mann, phase two, Dewey, and the Rockefeller Education Board. Yeah, we've been through all that. But yeah, it seems like the schools have always...
I went to the college that was founded by Horace Mann, Antioch. There's a monument to him right in the middle of campus. And of course, we thought it was wonderful. And then later on, when I started reading about the guy, I realized. And Dewey was a big hero as well, of course, you know, because great progressive. And then I found out what progressivism was all about.
Now, were you in school at one point to be a teacher?
No.
But you did.
I always wanted to be a teacher, but I wanted to teach college, always.
All right. So, yeah, I mean, I was in a graduate program to be certified.
Okay.
As a secondary history teacher.
Yeah.
And we sang union songs in the, like from the 30s. This was what we did. Dewey was God. Mann was God. And they were very different guys. You know, it's not all 12 guys in a smoke-filled room conspiring. You know, they're different generations. I don't think they ever would have even met each other.
Who? Oh, Mann and Dewey? Oh, yeah. No, not at all.
Two generations apart.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But all along the way, in the 1920s, we talked on the show last week about the Oregon compulsory school law, where the Protestants aligned with the Klan to shut down all the Catholic schools.
Right.
So since this institution exists, somebody is always trying to grab it for exactly what you're saying, to get people to line up for their agenda. And it's changed a little. It's changed a little. Like Dewey was very different. Dewey was considered a reformer. Man was considered more the creator or the bringer of the system from Central Europe.
Mm-hmm.
So you want to get one or two more out? I know that's a bad situation. You probably don't have a lot of parents you can vent to out there, or do you?
I can't. Where do I begin with this? I mean, oh, here's a good one. So this is specific to a, you know, a very high level wealthy public. It's all public school, but still, this is a wealthy school. I'm sure this does not happen in Watts, but fourth grade at the end of the school year, my son's teacher forced all of them to give a presentation to all the parents about their career goals and how they would achieve them. So it wasn't just, I want to be a doctor. It was, I'm going to go to Santa Monica High School. I'm going to get a 3.9 GPA. I'm going to be in the following medical clubs. And then I'm going to go to this medical, I'm then going to go to UCLA Medical School. And I'm going to work with this famous surgeon. And I'm going to do this internship. And then I'm going to have a practice in on Wilshire and Beverly Hills. And I mean, it was unbelievable. So, yeah, no, but I mean, my main point about breaking and about lining up is that really, that's really what it's about social order, which is the progressive's great dream, right? Is to literally make society look like a machine.
Sure, absolutely.
That is, to me, that is fundamental. That is what everything else stems from. It's that core desire by progressives, the progressive mentality, to make us into straight lines and into squares.
Well, yeah, of course. I mean, if you're especially when your economic ideas are based on pretty much untested mathematical models that don't incorporate human action at all. Yeah, it's very important that people behave.
Even if they were tested mathematical models, I wouldn't be happy about it, right?
Okay, yeah.
I just don't want mathematical models teaching my child, right?
So, absolutely.
Yeah.
So the last question that I have, and anything you want to add, you can add. What do you do? You have this son in sixth grade. So as a parent, how do you try to offset the damage that you know is being, or the, at least the messages that are being foisted upon?
Yeah. So here's okay. So I was thinking, I love the name of your organization. I took a picture of your banner last night because I loved it so much. And I was thinking, you know, I want to get all your swag. Like, give me, like, I want magnets. I want bumper stickers. I want a poster. But then I was thinking, oh God, I can't put it up in my house because my son will see it. And then I have an ex-wife who's his mother who wouldn't like it. And, and he would get out, and then the teachers would hear about it, and his friends would hear about it, and his parents. You know, again, it's cultural. Everything shifts by culture. It's not about law. Forget about the law.
Yeah.
It's fine to run for school board and use it as a platform, but it's not about the law. You've got to change the culture. You've got to change people's ideas. Do what I do. I mean, I write about it. I talk about it. You do what you guys do. Talk about it. Write about it. Same thing. I mean, that's, you just keep doing that. You keep, and don't ever let them, and complain. Be a pain in the ass. Be a pain in the ass. It's difficult when you're the only parent who won't stand up for the Pledge of Allegiance at a school assembly that you're forced to go to. It's really difficult, but I do it anyway. Do that.
And what has the fallout of that been? Anything?
They think I'm an alien from outer space. I don't know what they think. I mean, they just look at me and it's extremely uncomfortable, and, you know, it's hundreds of people, and, you know, and again, this is, you know, very liberal Santa Monica. This is not Oklahoma. Like, I would expect it there, right? I'm talking about, I live in a very liberal world, right?
Yeah.
Where they don't even think about it. Oh, you stand up for the Pledge of Allegiance, you know, this utterly fascist thing, right? Just do that. Just, you know, that's how change starts. It's like one person doing something, and don't compromise. Don't let this tremendous cultural, I don't know if you're parents, but if this tremendous cultural pressure comes down on parents, that people who aren't parents aren't aware of. It is, I mean, the word fascist gets thrown around too much, but there is a fascistic element to it. It's very puritanical. You're supposed to sacrifice yourself entirely for your child. You're supposed to never expose them to anything unpleasant. And it's, you know, and it's all about training them for a career so they can be good yuppies.
Yeah, absolutely. Jeffrey Tucker was in that seat right before you, and he was talking about that adversity is good, but people have said, well, freedom, whatever, who cares? Comfort is the thing.
And well, I like comfort.
Oh, everybody, yeah, sure.
I want comfort, yeah. But, you know, it's unfortunately, to get comfort, sometimes you have to do stuff. Well, you have to fight. You have to fight in this world to get what you want. I mean, and if that's, it's freedom. You have to fight for freedom. You have to fight for comfort often. Yeah. Most of us do. Not all of us, but most of us do. But it's more like, you know, the other thing I can't stand is, like, there's sort of this aversion to intellectual conflict. There's this aversion to debate.
Yeah, yeah.
This is one of my pet peeves. This extends all the way through higher education, by the way. It's like, having an argument, God forbid, right? I love debates. I love conflicts of ideas. I love having the best argument go against another best argument from another position. They don't do that. They don't do that at all. Textbooks are abysmal. You know, they're just public. The textbooks that are used in public ed are horrific. I mean, it's basically, it's one string of hagiographies, right? It's this sort of idealization of these heroes. You know, the heroes have changed. It used to be Thomas Edison and Thomas Jefferson, and now it's Rosa Parks and Martin Luther King. But basically, there's no questioning of these people. These are uncomplicated figures, right? They're just, there's just hero worship. Hero worship, deference to authority, and order. That is what is taught. That's what it's all about. It's not about... Yeah.
Yeah. There's no individual empowerment, because what's absent from the Rosa Parks story is that this is a network of people. Like, you go on this bus, you get on this bus at this time, you sit here, you'll get arrested, we'll come bail you out. What's the story? She was tired.
That's just the tip of the iceberg. I mean, what's missing from the Rosa Parks story is endless. I mean, and if you read my book and the chapter on that, it's they tried to find someone to do that, to sit in the front seat of the bus. And the first person they picked kicked and scratched and screamed and spit at the bus driver. So she was not respectable. So we can't use her, because the civil rights movement was all about assimilation and being respectable, being good citizens, right? Yeah. Then the second person they picked was pregnant young woman, right? So they couldn't use her, so they had to find someone who was absolutely perfect culturally. You know, they said that Rosa Parks looked like apple pie, Mrs. America. That was never, you know, things like that are never discussed, right? And the sort of bourgeois values. See, again, the rage I have about this is because I'm talking about, in my case and in general, I'm talking about the best public schools in the most liberal districts. I'm not talking about rural, small town schools in Kansas, right, where they don't believe in evolution, et cetera. I'm talking about Santa Monica and New York City, places I've been, in Berkeley. There's no questioning of bourgeois values at all. So work in itself is a virtue. That comes from the Puritans. This is Cotton Mather, and this is the Victorians, right? That was their rule number one. That is drilled into our children's heads every single day, no matter what you get from the work, right? This is the Puritan work ethic. No matter what you get from it, even if you get nothing, you must do it because that's good. That's a fundamentally Christian concept that has been secularized by progressives and even socialists. That is drilled into their heads every single day. Live to work. It's a very American thing.
Defer the happiness.
Yeah.
We'll tell you when you can.
Absolutely. Yeah. And deferred gratification. And of course, sex is never mentioned except in sex ed class, right? It's bizarre. Every psychologist in the world agrees that sexuality is the most central fundamental thing in our psychologies, right? It's never mentioned. Why is that? Except in sex ed class for, you know, half an hour. And of course, it's all very neatly delineated, put in little tiny boxes and made antiseptic and handed over to them. So it's not actually sex anymore by the time they get it in their classroom. But otherwise, it's just simply never mentioned. The most important thing in human psychology is never mentioned. Is that education? I don't think so.
No. We are about to get kicked out of here, but thank you so much for your time. Can you give us your site in the book, so people can go and check it out?
Yeah, the book is A Renegade History of the United States. It's available on Amazon and bookstores. And my site is ThaddeusRussell.com.
Excellent. Thank you so much. That was a great discussion.
Thanks
and
a lot.
Maybe when we have more time, we could do a bigger show.
I'd love to. That'd be great.
Great. So thanks again.
Sure.
This is Brett, and in case you haven't heard, I would like you to pay me $6 a month for doing School Sucks Podcast. Now, I know some of you are saying, Brett, no. But others might be asking, $6 a month? What are you going to do to earn it? Well, let me start by telling you this. In 2012, the number of monthly subscribers grew by almost 100%. And as a result of that growth, I had the time and resources necessary to produce more shows, release more videos, grow our YouTube subscribers by over 100%. I increased podcast listeners by almost 40% and debuted a live call-in show on Ustream and LRN.fm. But now, with the new website at schoolsucksproject.com, all subscribers get access to a bonus content section called the AV Club. Now, some of you might be saying, Brett, that's probably just you and your friends effing around. But that couldn't be further from the truth. How about a little peek at what's inside? Drop the beat. Everybody knows. Role play.
I asked you a question.
Yeah, but why? Who are you? I don't understand what's happening.
Do you see this badge on my chest?
So you are airport security?
Sir, I work for the transportation security asshole.
That's not what it stands for.
Men's health issues.
If my brain wasn't evolved enough to handle as much porn as I watch, how would I be able to watch that much porn and not have exploded by now?
Well, very rarely will you see a man explode.
Experimental radio.
I'm Gardner Goldsmith, along with
Brett.
That's never been done before.
Political science.
All a dog will ever make is poop, and all bureaucrats ever make when they're at work is government.
Regular science.
I have a disease that makes me turn into a bat.
Science fiction.
Now, I love Doctor Who, but his explanations are so cockamamie.
History.
Abraham Lincoln spent a lot of time around logs.
I learned that in school.
Yeah, he also had a giant blue ox named Babe.
And he freed the slave.
Foreign affairs.
The Russians. Remember them?
Yeah.
Huh. They'll be back.
Friendships.
Okay, we are back.
Yeah! Fuck you.
Interviews.
What do you like to do? What are you calling for?
I like to giggle.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Me too.
Philosophers interviewing dead terrorists in heaven.
I have a question for Osama. So, according to certain interpretations of Islamic law, you get 72 virgins in heaven. What I don't understand is that in heaven, I don't think anybody ages. Like, you don't get older because you're never going to die. So nothing about your body changes. So isn't it the case that these women are going to stay virgins for the rest of time?
Osama hates that. Osama has 72 virgins, and they just keep telling me that they love me. They always text me, "I love you, Osama," and put a little smiley face at the end.
That's good to know. It's good to get that kind of feedback on what's going on in heaven there.
Presidential wisdom.
Three words. Transdimensional lizard Jews.
Snakes. On a plane.
Snakes on a plane. Snakes on a plane. Oh shit. Snakes on a plane.
You guys are great.
Liberals.
I really suggest you check out a book. It's written by Professor Richard Crabtree. It's called How I Know Everything About Why the Free Market Doesn't Work, Even Though I Never Spent 5 minutes of My Career Outside of Academia. Volume 1.
And of course, the behind-the-scenes planning of some of our greatest moments.
I'm going to make him get up and face somebody and pretend like he's showing them his and then that later that person gives him a job and they get married. It should be Kokesh.
This is going to be an absolute train wreck, dude.
So don't settle for some corny 4-minute ad that takes reputable people out of context in a comically misleading way, like this.
Do we want a giant mommy state or do we want a giant daddy state? Because what else is there?
Right.
And this.
They demolish the buildings with lasers from the skies.
And this.
And we're going to make sure all businesses supply hardcore porn. You know what I mean?
No, instead, get in there. There's over 150 hours of additional content. And even if you don't have time to listen to it all, which nobody does, once in a while it's okay to go on a little internet treasure hunt. So go to schoolsucksproject.com and click on the support tab.
I'm Newt Gingrich, and I endorse this message.
Thank you for your participation.